Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, first of my good evening. Welcome to the programme here on Manx Radio. In the next half hour, we'll go through some of the day's main news. Coming up before 5.30, we have been hearing a lot this week about bed capacity at Nobles Hospital, but what about the pressure on its emergency department? We'll take a closer look at that this evening. Also tonight, the MHK behind that horse trams motion, which was in Tynwald this week, reflects on what its success could mean going forward. The Manx Development Corporation says it's made significant progress over the past year, but what does that actually look like in practice? And as we continue our journey around the island ahead of the House of Keys general election today, we are in Garth to see what people there think are the most pressing issues. All that, the weather and the traffic and travel as well. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can email studio@manxradio.com or text 166177. We'll start, though, as usual, with a roundup of the day's main news headlines with Amy Festermay.
Manx Care's admitted the emergency department at Nobles Hospital is too small, but insists it's taking steps to manage demand in the short term. It's after the Medical Staff Committee highlighted a number of concerns about provision at the facility, particularly around A&E. Manx Care's Medical Director Chris Stockport says work is ongoing to improve the situation, but stresses he has total faith in the care provided in the ED.
The department is too small by modern standards, but we are doing things that will help in addition to waiting for a larger emergency department.
Farmers on the Isle of Man are demanding stronger legislation to tackle the issues surrounding sheep worrying. The Manx National Farmers Union also wants clearer enforcement, supported by public education campaigns about keeping dogs under control. The Department of Infrastructure estimates that 1-2% of vehicles on the island's roads aren't taxed. In response to a Tynwald written question, the department says it's not possible to give an exact loss of revenue. However, it's anticipated 1% of untaxed vehicles could result in a loss of around £110,000. Three local bands will take to the stage at the Rover's Return this Saturday to raise money for stillbirth charity SANS. The gig, dubbed Sound for SANS, has been organised by local mum Ali Mella, who lost her daughter Belle nearly 14 years ago after she was stillborn at 36 weeks.
I think it's important for bereaved parents to acknowledge that their child or their baby, you know, they did have a life and they are still parents and they always will be parents.
Turning to international news now, and a report's found stay-at-home slogans used during the COVID pandemic in the UK wrongly sent the message that the NHS was closed. The third part of the inquiries concluded the UK's overstretched healthcare systems came close to collapse. Households in the UK are braced for a more painful squeeze on their wallets than previously expected. The Bank of England's held the base rate of interest at 3.75%, with inflation forecasts jumping because of the Middle East conflict. And plans to expand Wimbledon have been given a boost in the High Court. A judge has ruled there shouldn't be restrictions on how the land earmarked for development can be used. Those are your headlines. I'll be back with the news in full at 6.
Thank you very much indeed, Amy. Well, the weather forecast now brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing, and it's short and sweet, to be honest. Continuing dry and clear this evening and tonight. Light winds, temperatures will fall to around 4 or 5 Celsius by dawn. And then tomorrow, another fine and sunny day, and it is going to feel quite warm again in those light winds, so maximum temperatures around 13. Just looking ahead to the weekend, fine and settled again on Saturday. It is going to turn cloudy later on Sunday with stronger winds and a little rain possible by evening, but let's not worry about that.
Manx Glass and Glazing are proud to be celebrating 40 years serving the Isle of Man's glazing needs. Visit the showroom on the Snugborough Trading Estate.
It's just gone 4 minutes past five here on Update. And as I said in the introduction, we have been talking a lot about Nobles Hospital this week. It has been the hot topic of conversation. This is because the Medical Staff Committee highlighted a number of concerns about provision at the facility, in their opinion, especially around the number of available beds and also about Nobles' emergency department. Now, the MSC is made up of 75 senior doctors and consultants and says physicians are expecting profound moral injury and deep psychological distress because of the gaps between the care they'd like to give and what they are operationally able to do. So how safe is ED and can we be confident using that facility? Well, Manx Care's medical director, Chris Stockport, has been talking to Amy.
The department is too small by modern standards. It's considerably too small. And so on a normal day, that makes it difficult. On a day when flow is also difficult, then that makes it especially difficult for them. But we are doing things that will help in addition to waiting for a larger emergency department. We've made a much bigger investment into our acute medical unit in the last year. We used to have two doctors. We've now got five consultant doctors in our acute medical unit. And that allows them to draw patients from ED faster where they can be managed in an acute medical unit environment. We're just about to open a clinical decision unit. That's a well-tested way to deal with congestion in an ED department in other places, and the evidence there shows that for those people that just need to stay for a short period of time until the impact of, for example, antibiotics or whilst waiting blood tests to come back, they can go to a clinical decision unit to be managed safely there and then, if necessary, transferred. So we've implemented both of those initiatives to take the pressure off our ED department, but it will be great when we have a larger ED department because that does allow staff to do what they are trained to do more quickly and more comfortably for everybody, especially patients.
That's Manx Care's medical director, Chris Stockport. You can find all the details about this story on the Manx Radio website. Well, something else that is very much in the focus is the global gas prices, and the chair of the Manx Utilities Authority says the organisation's forward buying strategy has significantly limited the island's exposure to the recent volatility. So speaking in Tynwald this week, John Wannenberg said that at the time of the strikes on Iran by the USA and Israel, Manx Utilities held a very strong forward-looking gas position. And as of the end of February, the authority was 91% hedged for the remainder of the current financial year. And hedging is a term that refers to a strategy where energy is purchased in advance and prices are locked in, essentially, to protect against market fluctuations. Mr. Wannenberg said the escalation in the Middle East caused a sharp rise in forward gas prices, costs increasing from 77 pence per therm to 120 pence per therm on the 2nd of March, and later reaching highs of 170 pence. However, he said he believed the authority's high level of hedging had significantly reduced its exposure to those increases. And at current prices, he said Manx Utilities estimated its additional costs have been limited to less than £50,000 until the next financial year. 7.5 minutes past five, and the future of the Douglas Bay horse tram again was back in the spotlight in Tynwald, with members unanimously backing a move to bring forward detailed plans to restore the full length of the line. But while that vote was unanimous, the debate around the tramway itself is still far from settled. It was Douglas South MHK Sarah Maltby who tabled that motion, instructing the government to bring forward comprehensive plans for its reinstatement. And here she is talking to political correspondent Phil Gorn.
Despite what many people might think, this administration actually hasn't discussed the horse trams, and we have been waiting for this business case and waiting for the capital funding request. So this isn't something that we have actually had a say in. So it kick-started that, and I think it was a really positive outcome. Unanimously supported today.
And that's quite surprising to me to learn that this iteration of Tynwald since the last Keys election, this hasn't been discussed.
Yeah, it does surprise me too, but I suppose there has been a huge amount of things that we have had to deal with and to get through. You know, it's not been an easy administration. I think we have been told it was coming. It just hasn't ever got to the bit. And Mr. Gard made a video. It sparked within me a passion to say, right, this has gone on long enough now. You really have had as many opportunities as we possibly could afford. We need to bring this into the public domain, because at the moment the public don't think that we care about this, and actually there's members in that court who really care about the heritage on the Isle of Man.
There was some recognition perhaps in the debate that this is not a hard and fast business proposition. You know, the business case isn't about the money. This is a heritage case. Is that fair?
Yeah, I do think it is fair. It is a heritage case, you know, predominantly. Of course it is. You know, it's the longest running heritage rail horse tramway in the world. You know, it's something that we should be really proud of. And what we need to remember is what we value and how people value what our heritage is. People have come from around the world to see this, our heritage rails on the island. They really value the Victorian infrastructure that we have here. This is not just something that we like to do because it's nostalgic. This is something that people really pay good money to come to the island to see. They'll stand in the rain, the wind, the hail. They'll stand there and they'll take their photos and they'll really appreciate what we have here. And I don't think sometimes that's always fully recognised as being a valuable asset to have.
That is Douglas South MHK Sarah Maltby. We don't get wind and rain and hail here, do we? You can find much more again on that story on the Manx Radio website. It's just gone 5:10. Well, the Manx Development Corporation says it's made significant progress over the past year, completing its first development and advancing a number of regeneration projects. But its latest accounts actually show it remains loss-making, and Christian, as ever, has been taking a look through the latest director's reports. Christian Fastemai, what can you tell us about this?
Yeah, Fastemai Beth. So the corporation, which is owned by Treasury, says the year to the end of March 2025 saw its first completed scheme, Tai Clag, on Westmoreland Road. That was finished within its £11 million budget. That is, of course, a former refurbished former nurses' home, now providing 37 apartments and a commercial unit, although rental income from that only began in coming after the end of the financial year.
So beyond that one project, has there been quite a bit happening elsewhere as well?
Yeah, so the report highlights progress on several sites, including, I'm going to try and say it, if I get it wrong, I'm going to apologise, Ballaclone, Fairfield School, and plans for Parade Street, along with the wider Westmoreland Village scheme, which has since received planning approval. That, of course, is a major proposal with more than 130 homes, as well as shops, offices, community space, based on what's called the 20-minute neighbourhood principles, essentially. Meaning people can access most of their day-to-day needs within a short walk or cycle.
But as I mentioned, financially, it is a little bit more of a mixed picture.
Yeah, so the corporation recorded an operating loss of just under £690,000. That is slightly improved on the previous year, though, but the bigger figure comes from what's known as the fair value loss, and that's linked to Tai Clag, which is an accounting adjustment reflecting what the business is judged to be worth. And in this case, it was valued lower than its original cost. So when you combine that with the operating loss, the total loss for the year comes to around about £3.2 million.
What does that mean for the organisation overall then?
Well, on paper, it means the corporation has moved into what's known as negative equity, where liabilities are greater than its assets. But the directors say it can continue operating what's known as a going concern, pointing to its cash position, borrowing arrangements and continued backing from Treasury.
And just on borrowing, that has increased as well, I understand.
Yeah, quite significantly. Well, Manx Development Corporation has a £50 million lending arrangement with Lloyds Bank. The amount drawn down rose to about £19.4 million at the end of March. It also has around £2 million in short-term loans from Treasury, which are being used to fund early-stage work on projects. Just finally, though, MDC says its aim is to become profitable in the longer term and eventually return money to Treasury. But for now, the report highlights a loss-making operation rather than generating any significant income. But naturally, future reports will show that rental income from Tai Clag, which couldn't be included in this one.
Christian, thank you very much indeed. It is 5:13, and it is that time of the week when we head over to a constituency on the Isle of Man and speak to residents about the issues on their mind ahead of the election in September. It's September the 24th that the Manx public will go to the polls to choose their next representatives. This week, Chanel Suku has been in Garve to speak to voters there.
The wind farm is probably up there for, I think, everyone in Garth, really, is certainly on the agenda, I imagine, yes.
Absolutely, I agree. And of course, the sewage plant, of course, which we hope will also be dealt with. You know, we're living laxly. These are two, big issues, really, for us.
There's too many holes in the roads. That's for starters, about something lacking. But I think Lackey's a great little place. There's lots of down the prom there. There's two cafes. But the state of the promenade itself is disgraceful. You know, the road has been patched up and it's so dreadful, big potholes in it and all sorts, you know. So that's one of the main things for me around here anyway.
Well, I think everyone has their own opinions of the key issues, don't they? I mean, mine, I'd put an end to net zero for a start. I don't think the island should be spending quite so much on trying to reach an ideal situation, to be honest. Yeah, it's unpopular really, but I'd have put the sewage work where they originally intended, down in the harbour where it already goes. I think to pump it all the way up the hill, to pump it all the way back down again, and the disruption installing it all, digging all the roads up, I think it's a nonsense really. I know some residents objected to it at the bottom. You can understand no one wants anything on the doorstep, do they? But as a generalisation, the money they've spent so far in trying to move it, I think it should have just gone down the bottom where it already is, personally. And the wind farm, no, I don't want it.
That is some of the people in Garve talking about what the election issues are from their point of view. You can head over to Manx Radio's election mini site, find all the places that we've been to so far, and there will be another constituency next week.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres.
So nothing specific on the roads, although we did understand along Circular Road it was quite busy a little bit earlier as people were trying to leave Douglas. We know that the old Castletown Road is now one way for traffic heading into Douglas. Traffic heading away from Douglas still needs to go via Quarterbridge. The road, though, still on schedule to reopen fully next Wednesday. Just a reminder, near the closure as well, temporary lights remain in place at the bottom of Cueg Hill. Just looking ahead to tomorrow, strike action by Unite the Union will again disrupt the bus services. So no dedicated school buses, but pupils can use other services with their go-card, with their trams, trains and the steam railway running. Contingency timetables will be in place. Priority routes linking Douglas, Nobles Hospital and the island's main towns. And a reminder, this industrial action set for 4 days each week, with normal services resuming on Tuesday as negotiations continue. Then it's just the usual traffic lights and everything that have been all over the island currently. All looking okay down at the airport, and then with the steam packet, the next sailing will be the Manxman at 7:15 to Heysham.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by
Quayside. Quayside, 664417.
Head to Quayside Tyres and Service Centre on South Quay Industrial Estate.
Quayside.
It is coming up to 17 minutes past five. We're just going to stay with the issue of travel because, as I just mentioned, for the best part of 2 weeks, there have been really lengthy queues in and out of Douglas during rush hour. And that is because of those works being undertaken on a wastewater main on the old Castletown Road. I wonder if we can find the person who's been in their car for the longest over that time. But from 7am this morning, the road was slightly less congested one way anyway, and that flow into Douglas reinstated past that closure at the Whitehoe Industrial Estate. It'll stay that way until Wednesday. As I say, the road scheduled to fully reopen then. Douglas North MHK John Wannenberg is the chair of Manx Utilities.
First of all, what I would say is that there are significant problems with traffic, and I absolutely take that on board, but there are more significant problems with the underlying infrastructure, which had to be sorted out. And there's no way around that. You've got to do these things or else the roads will just disintegrate. So I'm pleased to say that actually the MUA has been working very hard, and I could have said this yesterday, but I wanted to be sure that we'll convert to one-way traffic at Whitehoe, and hopefully we'll go to two-way traffic on the 25th, I think it is. So yes, they've been working incredibly hard, and it's all to do with these large chambers above the 900 millimeter line that goes from Douglas up to Merriweg. And these are things you absolutely have to get right. And it involves curing of concrete, which takes time, and you know, it doesn't need any vibration and the rest of it. But I don't want to labor the point that the important thing is that we've completed the works a little earlier than we thought we would. And hopefully there will be one-way traffic into Douglas.
That is the Manx Utilities Chair, John Wannenberg, there. So as 7 o'clock this morning was a little bit easier, hopefully, for you if you were getting into Douglas. Not sure what the situation is like currently trying to get home. If you let us know, that'd be great. Now, Manx Radio has reported a financial loss of £20,392 for the year ending the 31st of March 2025, as outlined in its latest annual report. Siobhan has been taking a look at the document.
The public service broadcaster received a government subvention from the Isle of Man Treasury of £1,184,024 for the year, equating to 50% of its income. The remaining 50% is financed via commercial advertising revenues. Its turnover for the financial year stood at £1,181,182, down by 7% compared to 2023-24. Operating expenses of £2,420,771 were £154 below the previous year. On the financial loss, in his opening statement, Managing Director Christopher Sully said, "Under all the circumstances, the resultant loss of £20,392 was, I believe, a creditable achievement given the continued market uncertainty, which is evident in almost all sectors that we engage with for our commercial advertising revenues." The report reveals the company remains reliant on future subvention payments and that Treasury, as shareholder, has confirmed it has no current intention to reduce the level of subvention allocated in the budget, which is subject to the approval of Tynwald. The approval of the subvention for the year ended 31st of March 2026 was done in February 2025 and was fixed at £1,360,705, inclusive of funding for minor capital works of £153,000. Also termed a public service grant for public service broadcasting, the subvention is provided on the basis a number of conditions are met across the station's broadcast output. Elsewhere, the report states that the broadcaster employs an average number of 35 people. In terms of remuneration, however, it only outlines that of the company's directors and trustees alongside auditors. Four directors received a combined total of £279,251, trustees took home £42,965 and auditors £13,697. The company also saw £188,600 paid in pension costs. The full report is available on Tynwald's Register of Business and will be laid before the court at the April sitting.
Siobhan Fletcher reporting. It's just gone 20 past five. And just a warning now that this next story may be difficult for some listeners. A mum on the island has organised a gig with a difference this weekend as local bands take to the stage to raise money for a cause close to her heart. Known to many here as a competitive skateboarder and from her work with Galskate, Ali Mella lost her daughter Belle nearly 14 years ago when she was still born at 36 weeks. Siobhan sat down with Ali to find out more about this gig at the weekend and why the charity Sands means so much to her.
It's still not a very open discussion about baby death and stillbirth and neonatal death as well, and it's still treated as a bit of a dirty secret and a bit of a taboo subject. And I think it's important for bereaved parents to acknowledge that their child or their baby, you know, they did have a life and they are still parents and they always will be parents. And that's what the work of Sands does, is it highlights just how important it is for parents who are left behind and how they move forward with their life, and the support that they receive through the charity is absolutely invaluable. And the help that I received nearly 14 years ago then, it was very, very different. It was very much kind of kept quiet and you didn't talk about these things, whereas now there's a lot more support for parents and there's some great other charities that are doing stuff as well. But this is just for me to highlight that just this charity did such a huge amount for me at the time, that this is kind of a thank you, and also to celebrate and commemorate Belle as well. So hopefully it's raising awareness that, oh, actually this does happen, and it does unfortunately happen quite often. And the work that this charity does and other charities like it, is it can help people who don't know what to say to parents, or they don't know what to say to families who have suffered this. And it's really helpful for people who aren't going through this but don't necessarily know how to deal with it or what to say or talk to people about. So that's another thing that they really do help with as well. It's a really great cause.
That is Ali Mella, and that Sounds for Sands gig will be held at the Rovers Return Pub this Saturday night from 8. And if you can't go along but would like to donate to the cause, there is a link to Ali's Just Giving page in our article over at manxradio.com. Now, following another successful title fight, undefeated Manx pro boxer Sam Rennie says he's now targeting international glory going forward. The island-born fighter won the vacant ANBF Australasian Super Featherweight title, easy for him to say, in Australia last weekend. That's the second belt he's won in less than a year. He's been telling us how it feels to now be a two-time champion and what he feels the key has been to his rapid rise in the sport.
Hard to find the words to explain. I'm pretty sure I said that last time, but pro boxing has been around the Isle of Man since the early 1900s, and we'd never had a champion once in the history of the country. And then I come along and I do it twice in the space of 9 months. So it comes across quite rash when you say it like that, but it's not coming across cocky. I'm just proud of myself, and I hope I've done the island proud.
That's two title belts in the space of less than a year. What's been the key to having these two successes in such a short space of time?
I'm just trying to climb the ranks. I'm just, you know, hungry for success. And, you know, I've got good people around me. I've got a good team around me. I'm fighting good opponents with winning records, you know, lads that are ranked higher than me. I'm just chasing all this glory. I want to see how far I can go in the sport. You know, it started off just be a pro champion, and now as a two-time pro champion, and you know, I'm the king of Australia and Asia. Hopefully one day the world. Hopefully I can become world champion. I know I've got a long way to go, but you know, I'm just keep on climbing. A lot of people, like you say, they'll fight once and then they'll settle off and taper off, and then they'll fight again and they'll fight a few journeymen or whatever it takes. But me, I'm just thinking, you know, balls to the wall and see how far I can take it.
In the, whether it's the short or long term, I know it's only just been a couple of days since your last fought, but in terms of plans going forward, have you got anything specific or I suppose more general in mind over the next few months?
I've got a few things I'm in talks with, a few international fights. Can't say too much or get in trouble, but I was straight onto the phone to my manager the next day and we're looking at some international fights now. I feel like I've done what I can on the domestic scene. I would love a homecoming show. Again, I've said it almost every time, but I'd love to fight in the Isle of Man and get a show on over there, or at least across the pond in Liverpool or something close to the Isle of Man. So we're trying to get something like that sorted, but we're definitely looking at an international fight in the near future.
Well, that would be brilliant to see him over here. That is fighter Sam Rennie there, who is talking to Rob, who is here now with the sport, which is brought to you an update by The Print Shed.
Faster Mike, first off tonight, the dates and venues for the 2027 Commonwealth Youth Games in Malta have been unveiled. Commonwealth Sport has confirmed the event will take place from Friday, the 29th of October, to Thursday, the 4th of November next year across the islands of Malta and Gozo. The games will include 8 sports and are expected to welcome around 1,200 athletes aged between 14 and 18 from 74 nations, including the Isle of Man. The previous Commonwealth Youth Games took place in 2023 in Trinidad and Tobago, where the Isle of Man secured 2 bronze medals, both in cycling, and the Isle of Man has hosted the Games once previously in 2011. Well, the Malta Games will begin with the opening ceremony on Friday the 29th of October, followed by a 6-day sport programme from Saturday the 30th of October to Thursday the 4th of November. In athletics, organisers of the Isle of Man Easter Festival of Running say there's been a record demand to take part in this year's event. Ahead of the 3-day series from Friday the 3rd of April to Sunday the 5th of April, 772 pre-entries have already been confirmed, with 468 of those committed to the full festival. Along with a large field of local competitors expected to take part, the majority of participants signed up are based off-island, with international representation expected from the UK, Ireland, France and Germany. Pre-entries are now closed, however there will be a limited number of places available on each race day. Day 1 on Friday the 3rd of April will feature the Port Erin 10K, which will take place between 4:45pm and 6:15pm, followed by the Peel Hill race starting at 1:30pm the next day. The final race on Sunday the 5th of April will be the Douglas 5K, getting underway at 9:30am. And in cycling, the Castletown Crit Race is set to return later this year. The event, organised by the Manx Viking Wheelers Club, has been confirmed to be taking place on Sunday the 19th of July in and around the ancient capital of Man. Last year saw the meeting making a comeback after a long hiatus and featured a mix of both competitive racing and family-friendly events aiming to cater to all ages and abilities. And during the 2025 edition, it was Sophie Smith who went on to win the main women's race, whilst Adam Kelly was declared men's race winner after that race in particular was cut short due to poor weather. Entries are now open for both the junior and senior categories for this summer's occasion.
You tempted to enter, Rob?
I need a bike first.
Okay.
That'd be quite a good start to have.
It
looks like
one.
A fantastic event, though. They were obviously held up a bit by weather last time, but great to see that round the streets of Castletown.
Oh, just brilliant. Absolutely. Such a picturesque setting. So, yeah, fingers crossed for the weather. I mean, if it's like it is today, we'll be all right, won't we?
We'd love that for the rest of the year, wouldn't we?
Oh, yes, please. Rob, thank you very much indeed. That is all from Update tonight. Coming up next, it's Shaq Lair with Fiona McArdle. Chris Kinley will be here at 6 with Greatest Hits. At 9, A Little Light Music with Morris Powell. And at 10, Rhianne Evans will be here with After Hours. Get out there, enjoy some of that evening sunshine. Update will be back with you at 5 p.m. tomorrow.